Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Scream. Nobody? Okay, no cream.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Guys, we've made a great effort so far. Let's just keep it up.
That's right. We can't have anyone freak out there, okay? We've got to keep our composure. We've got too far. There's too much to lose. We've got to keep our composure.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
A lot of pressure. You got to rise above it. Mm-hmm. You got to harness in the good energy, walk out the bad. Harness, energy, walk, bad. Mm-hmm. Feel the flow, happy. Feel it. It's circular.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Hey, guys. Oh, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here. We have a loaded second hour, and let's just dive into it, man. We have been huge fans of the Tiger King series on Netflix. My wife, actually, coincidentally, our guest is Robert Moore. He created the Tiger King podcast. Mm-hmm. My wife didn't know Netflix made a thing, and she goes, oh, I just finished this podcast.
Right, you guys are on different pages. She was the podcast, he were the show.
Right, so I said, oh, that's awesome. So I finished the series. I dove into Robert Moore's podcast. I haven't finished it quite yet, but I dove in, and I'm so fascinated. We're both fascinated. So Robert's joining us now. Robert, first of all, thanks for doing double duty here on our station. I know you were on last night with our Drive Time show. It's great to have you on. Robert, I want to start with this. For the listeners out there who have heard about the Tiger King, but haven't quite watched or heard anything about it, could you do a very quick backstory of who Joe Exotic is and what this story is?
Oh my God. That's the hardest thing to answer. Okay. So Joe Exotic is a very eccentric, gay, polygamous redneck who carries guns all the time. He's got a bleach blonde mullet, and he lives down in Oklahoma where he has this zoo. And the zoo is very controversial because he breeds tigers and lions and ligers and all these weird hybrids there, like many of them, dozens a year. And the reason why he bred them was so that he could charge people money to pet them, because he could make a lot of money that way. But needless to say, that's a very controversial thing to do, because then these lions and tigers all end up, God knows where, they end up in backyard zoos, they end up getting killed. Terrible things happen to the lions and tigers when they grow up because they're expensive to feed. So there's a woman in Florida named Carol Baskin who has made it her mission in life to shut down people like Joe. Joe and Carol end up in a feud that escalates and escalates over many years. Joe impersonates Carol at one point. She sues him. She wins $1 million. And then the debt starts to weigh on him, and he gets increasingly enraged with her to the point where he hires a hitman to kill her. Now, that's the simple version of the story. There's a lot more to it than that.
God, it is so incredible. How did you stumble across this? Like, how did this come across your wire and you thought, I'm going to do a podcast about it?
I initially came across it just through a story in the L.A. Times. It said, Michael Jackson's alligators burned alive in zoo fire, which I thought was a pretty odd headline. Yeah. And so I opened it up and I discovered Joe Exotic, and I fell right down the Joe Exotic wormhole. And then I pitched it to a men's magazine who I'm not going to name. And they sent me down there, and I went and lived at the zoo for a week. And I knew there was a story here, because Joe was telling me about his hatred of Carol. He was telling me about his desire to kill Carol. But I couldn't quite get the story to come together, because there was no storyline. Nothing had happened. It was just this quirky guy. So I kept talking to Joe. I visited the zoo a couple more times. I went and talked to Carol and Howard. But then finally, once he was arrested, there was a conclusion to the story. So then it all came to fruition and published a really long 10,000-word feature in New York Magazine and then the 6-part podcast for Wondery.
Robert, Joe is a very big narcissist. For people that are going to dive into this story, he's a huge narcissist. He wants the attention. He's always filming. He's always talking. When you stayed with him and you got there and you're like, ah, dive into this story a little bit, and you're getting to know who he is and what this whole thing's kind of about, walk us through what it's like to stay on that property for a week and see the dynamic of taking care of these huge wild animals that shouldn't be caged while also dealing with a character like Joe Exotic. What's it like to stay a week with Joe Exotic and company?
Well, I'll tell you, he's both a dream and a nightmare for any journalist. And he's a dream because he talks and he talks and he talks, and he seems not to be hiding anything because the things he's saying are so outlandish. You know, I mean, I heard him say at one point that, you know, there are a bunch of school kids there. And he says, God, I hate children. I wish they'd all just been drowned. You know, he'd say just really off-the-wall things like that. And you think, wow, this guy is so honest. But then later you discover that he's lying to you about so many things. So it was kind of dizzying. I mean, you walked in the door, you were in a gift shop just full of Joe Exotic merchandise, everything you can imagine, candy, condoms, massage oil, underwear, T-shirts, everything had his face on it. There was a TV in the corner playing his music videos on a continuous loop. He comes in, when he met me, he walked in the door, and he had a cameraman following him. So the cameraman is now filming me and filming Joe as I'm interviewing Joe. And then takes me on this tour through the zoo, and he walks through the zoo, and he's playing with all the animals. You know, he had these chimpanzees that he was feeding banana-flavored Twinkies to. He was playing with a bear, got into a cage with a tiger, and then he takes me back to his house. And his house was this little ranch house that was inside the zoo. It was actually inside of, like, a cage inside the zoo. And in there, he had all these baby low ligers, which is half liger, just half tiger and lion, and then half lion. What? So these baby low ligers, which are incredibly rare animals, they barely exist anywhere on Earth. He has them in his house, just running around, scratching up his furniture. I'm playing with this animal. It was all so surreal. You know, it just, none of it really seemed like reality. It seemed almost like reality television brought to life or something.
Yeah, I've heard people explain the podcast and the documentary as kind of, it feels like it's one of those mockumentaries, like somebody just created this whole storyline in their head and came up with all these characters, but then you realize that it's actually real. I'm curious, what is the, like, when you're walking around the park and these people are there, it is soaking in Joe Exotic and paying to come, you know, experience everything that he has to offer. What's the opinion of him, like, from the patrons? Because the guy ran for governor and he actually got a decent number of votes. Like, is he actually respected? Is he a big laughingstock? Like, how do people in Oklahoma feel about him?
I went around Wynnewood and I interviewed people there, and they don't have a really high opinion of him. They think, I mean, he's kind of the town eccentric. You know, I think a lot of them kind of find him a bit embarrassing. But most of the people who came to the zoo didn't really know who Joe Exotic was. I mean, you would drive down the highway and you'd see all these billboards of this man with this bleach blonde mullet and this tattooed eyeliner cuddling with tigers. And it would say, you know, the GW Zoo, Joe Exotic, et cetera. But most of them just wanted to go to a zoo. I mean, it's halfway mm-hmm. between Dallas and Oklahoma City. It was right there on the highway. So a lot of people, it's just families, groups of school kids, stuff like that, who wanted to go and play with a baby tiger. Then they'd walk in and realize that the whole zoo was really about Joe. He was like star of the show. It wasn't about the tigers. And you could see this look on their face like, what's happening? I mean, he would get inside a tiger cage and give these speeches to the audience about how much he hated Carol Baskin and PETA and how people were trying to break into the zoo and poison his animals and how he kept two guns on his side at all times in case he needed to shoot someone. And the school children would just have these shocked and horrified looks on their faces like, what kind of a zoo is this?
Robert Moore is our guest. He created the Tiger King podcast, which kind of inspired and I think helped create the Netflix docuseries. Everybody's talking about this story. You can find Robert on Twitter at Robert M-O-O-R underscore and follow him for more insight on this. And he's also writing he's currently writing a book in the woods. I'll ask you this then. When you listen to the pod, what's the biggest difference in your opinion? First of all, have you watched the Netflix docuseries? Have you watched that all the way through?
Yeah, of course. And I should correct you on something. Our podcast definitely did not inspire the docuseries. Eric Good, the guy who made this documentary, was in on this story a year before I was.
He started
in 2014. So he's been doing this for a really long time. And that's part of the reason why this documentary is so rich in detail, is because he was filming with Joe for a long time. And then once Joe went to jail, he bought all of Joe's hard drives. He got like, gave him, I think they said in court that he paid $60,000 for all of Joe's hard drives and got the rights to all his footage. So everything Joe ever filmed went into this documentary. So that's why there's like this incredible wealth of scenes in this documentary.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. I was going to ask, what are some differences based on what you watched and then what you created on the podcast? What's something that maybe you went with in the podcast that maybe they didn't include as much in the Netflix series that you think is pretty vital for people to know about this crazy story as well?
I think that my one overarching criticism of the documentary, which by the way, I think is fantastic. I think that with the amount of information and wacky characters and things they had to deal with, they did a marvelous job of bringing it all together, making it really entertaining. My one critique would be, I think they go a little soft on Joe. I think that they actually let him off the hook a little bit mm-hmm. because they don't call him out on a lot of the egregious lies that he was telling people. As I say in my Twitter thread, I made this long thread of all the things you may not have seen in the documentary. You guys can check it out. One of the things I point out is that Joe claimed to have been dying of bone marrow cancer and was raising money from his followers to pay his expenses. Oh, and he told me he was dying of bone marrow cancer. You know, he claimed to have been singing those country songs and was going around talking about what a great country singer was. He wasn't singing those country songs. That's obvious to anyone who hears his speaking voice. And I've talked to the songwriters, the people who sang those songs. You know, there were a lot of lies that he told. And the biggest thing is that a lot of people seem to have been coming away from this documentary thinking that Joe was framed, that Joe didn't actually hire a hitman to kill Carol, that it was Eric and Alan setting him up. And I can tell you from having sat through that trial, that is just categorically false. There's overwhelming evidence that Joe was involved and wanted to hire a hitman to kill Carol.
God. It's amazing that you bring that up because we were literally having that conversation yesterday about, you kind of sympathize for him, right? He was totally set up. It's like you get through the documentary. That is such a great point. Now, the documentarian, too, like I saw you on Twitter talking about him. It sounds like he has an interesting backstory, too.
Yeah, he does. He's kind of an interesting character. He is a wealthy hotel owner and bar owner from New York City who, you know, had been, I mean, he used to hang out with, like, Andy Warhol and Madonna. You know, he opened this nightclub called Area that was very popular and has a, you know, the Bowery Hotel and B-Bar, all these cool kind of places. And then he became obsessed apparently with turtle conservation. He was just really trying to save endangered turtles. And through that, he discovered snakes. I believe it was like the underground snake trade. And from that, as you see in the beginning of the documentary, mm-hmm. then he discovers that there's this underground cat trade. There used to be a snow leopard in a van. And through that, he finds Joe Exotic. So he had originally intended to make a documentary just about the underground trade in big cats, but Joe Exotic became the focus of the documentary and Carol because there was just so much going on there and it was such a rich narrative structure. He was really tireless. I watched him at the trial. He and Rebecca filmed everything. They got everyone on the record. It was a really monumental effort.
Yeah, I think, you know, that Robert, that was one of my big takeaways just from watching was when you get these kind of stories, like Making a Murderer Made a couple years ago, right, is you get a lot of good access and footage. And this one takes it to a level we've never had. We've never seen access where every big thing, minus some of the stuff they obviously left out or didn't portray well enough, you almost have documentation of every single thing they talked about or that they did. It's quite outstanding in that regard. I do want to ask you this. Do you think there was ever a time when he started this? Because the other thing the docuseries does is it kind of ends with him talking to his chimpanzees and how he kept him in a cage and he seemed to have remorse over that. And I think there is a sympathetic nature to it. Do you think that he had a point where he created that zoo or whatever you want to call it and he meant positivity with it? Or do you think this was always about making a sick amount of money and he never really cared about animals whatsoever? Like, do you think he had a point where he cared and then he started to make real big money and it changed him?
Yeah, see, this is kind of the great tragic irony of Joe's life. He really was an animal lover. And we go into this in a lot more detail in the podcast and the article I wrote. You know, he was this kid who grew up, you know, gay and bullied in Kansas and Texas and Wyoming, and was kind of ostracized, and he turned to animals. I mean, he was raising animals from a young age. He was taking in, you know, raccoons and deer and things like that that were abandoned and nursing them back to health, even as a little kid. Then he opened up a pet store with his very first husband, this guy named Brian Ryan. And then they had a great little life together, but Joe's brother died in a drunk driving accident. Joe decided to open the sanctuary for animals. This is what the GW Zoo was supposed to be what Carol Baskin has today. It was supposed to be a sanctuary where you take in animals other people didn't want. And for the first while there, that's all they did. They didn't breed. They didn't sell. They just took care of injured and abandoned animals. Then Joe's husband died. He died of complications regarded to HIV. He had HIV. And that kind of changed Joe. A lot of people say his personality changed. One person told me, you know, that's when Joe Schreibvogel went away and Joe Exotic was born. Mm. This guy who was obsessed with his ego, he was obsessed with his image, he was obsessed with power and money, started to come to the forefront. And so he started breeding tigers. He started selling tigers. He started doing these road shows. He started becoming a magician and then a country music star and then a reality star and then a politician. It all became about Joe. And over time, it stopped being about the animals. And in fact, the animals were just kind of a burden in the end because he had so many of them. They were so expensive to take care of. But then, you know, at the very end, I mean, I had the same conversation with Joe. He is very contrite. You know, he's sitting there in a cage looking out saying, my God, this is what I did to those animals. This is how my tigers must have felt. This is how my chimpanzees must have felt, sitting in a cage all day with nothing to do. Yeah. And so, you know, there is some kind of karmic comeuppance for what he subjected all those animals to.
Yeah. Hey, Robert, we're against it. We got to take a quick, like, 2-minute commercial. Is there any way we could get you to hang around? We just have a couple more questions. We're really into this. Is that cool?
Yeah, I'm around.
All right, perfect. Robert Moore is our guest here. He created the Tiger King podcast. He's going to hang around. We're going to bring him back. We got some more questions on the Tiger King because, man, it is all the rage right now. Robert Moore will hang on with us. We'll get to more next on the Tiger King on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We've got Robert Moore, who created the Tiger King podcast, on the line. He hung around. So thank you very much for hanging with us. He's on Twitter, at Robert Moore, M-O-O-R underscore. Give him a follow. We're talking Joe Exotic and the Tiger King.
Well, you introduced us to all these characters in the podcast. We got to see him on the documentary. I'm just curious to ask, like, from the interactions that you've had with them, excluding Joe Exotic, which one was truly, like, the craziest that when you're just sitting across from him, it's hard to comprehend?
They're all pretty eccentric in different ways. I would say that the one that was, I don't know about craziest, but the scariest to me was Jeff Lowe.
Yeah.
He has a very cold demeanor. He has these sort of reptilian eyes that stare into you, these very cold blue eyes. And whenever I was around him, which was only twice in person, it was unsettling to me. I mean, that's a guy who, of all the people in this story, he's probably the one to be most afraid of.
When you first got there, I heard you mention this yesterday, when you got there was around the time, I believe, that Joe, I think everybody kind of walks away with the same assumption that Joe probably sabotaged and blew up his own studio to destroy evidence. It seems like you get there at maybe the craziest time, given the timeline that we got from the docuseries. Were you even mentally prepared for what you ended up finding out and creating with this podcast? Do you think you were really prepared for this story?
Oh, no, not at all. I had no idea what this was going to do to my life. I mean, I thought this would be a quick little Men's Magazine 4,000-word story about a quirky guy with the zoo. I had no idea that this is what would happen. And what happens with this story and why it draws everyone in, and again, this is a credit I give to the documentary because they captured this really well, is there's this quality I call fractal weirdness, where the deeper you zoom in on any one detail, the weirder it gets.
Right.
Normally, as a journalist, when you look at a story, the headline is the most interesting thing. And then you dig deeper, and it's actually reality is less interesting, you know, than the story you read. Like, that happens all the time when you're a journalist. However, this story, the deeper you dig, the weirder it gets. Everything is just fascinating. Every single person involved, down to the most minor characters, are scoundrels and liars and bizarre. There's this bizarre, deeply American strangeness to every element of this story. And part of it is because exotic animals attract eccentric people. Part of it's because there was a lot of methamphetamine and other drugs going on that pushed people to weird extremes. You know, there's just a strangeness to it all that's captivating and hypnotic. And that's why I couldn't look away, even when it looked like at one point I couldn't publish the article. I said, you know, I'm just going to keep hoeing this row until something comes of it because I can't stop. It's fascinating.
You get addicted to it, man. How many times, two-parter, how many times were you offered drugs maybe on the week that you were there?
I was thinking the same question.
And then how many times did you fear for your life?
Well, see, that, what's interesting is Joe actually was very anti-drug in public. In fact, he would go around giving speeches to make the kids pledge to never take drugs, even though he was taking meth, like, a lot. And it told me, even back into the 80s, he was snorting meth with his boyfriend and going out to clubs and stuff. He'd been doing drugs for a long time. But he, in public, said he hated drugs. If any employee was caught doing drugs, they were fired on the spot. Because one of the things about running a zoo is everyone kind of needs to be on their game when they're working, right? If you're drinking or if you're on drugs, like, someone could die. And so he was actually quite strict about that. And then, you know, so at the time, actually, I didn't see any drug use. The only person I ever saw doing drugs was Travis, who was just high all the time. You know, and that was just weed. So it was actually pretty well hidden. It wasn't till later when I left and I started interviewing all of his former employees that I discovered the rampant drug use and the danger of being there. I mean, to get to your other question, I had one employee, former employee, tell me, you know, be careful because they have a system set up down there for death. So they could have you. And what he meant was they kill and butchered horses and cows all the time to feed to the tigers. He said they could have you killed, butchered, and fed out in 15 minutes. And so the next time I came back to the zoo, I was feeling pretty nervous.
Jeez, this is author, journalist, and podcast creator Robert Moore, our guest here. He's on Twitter at Robert Moore _. Give him a follow. Tiger King Joe Exotic is what we're talking about. Now, I've heard rumblings of maybe them following this up, people wanting to create movies and, you know, TV shows. Twitch, the TV show, I don't really need actors. This story in itself is great enough with the stuff you have. But I'm curious, from your perspective, have you completely moved on from this story? Or maybe does this make you think, God, it's such a weird story. We don't even know anything about Bhagavan. I mean, that dude's down in South Carolina doing God knows what. I know at the end of it, they say he's being investigated. Has this motivated you to maybe diving into somebody like him? Carol, do you want to pick this story up again and create maybe another podcast with it? Or is this something that you're moving on from and maybe you're just kind of wrapping up talking about it?
No, yeah, I'm pretty much moving on from this. If Eric and Rebecca want to do, you know, bonus episodes where they really dig deep on Doc Antle or Mario Chabrow or any of these other guys, I would be fascinated to watch. But personally, I mean, I'm writing a book about trees right now. You know, it's like, just the farthest I can get to this story. I need like a bath for my brain. But the truth is that, you know, I am working on that. We signed a deal with Universal to make a TV series out of the miniseries. So it'll be starring Kate McKinnon as Carol Baskin. We haven't cast Joe Exotic yet, but that will be something that will be coming out on some streaming service. Will be the same way Wondery made Dirty John and Dr. Death. I don't know if you guys have seen those, but you know, they're very good at making podcasts into these TV miniseries. We're going to do a similar thing with Joe Exotic. So that should be out in a couple of years.
How about that?
That sounds awesome. And it also sounds like if you put it on like the Hallmark Channel or Oxygen, you know, those thrillers, yeah, you're like, yeah. It becomes cheesy, but it's so good that you can't look away.
Well, if you need help casting it, I did see, I think Dax Shepard sent a tweet out today saying like, if I don't get to play Joe Exotic, nothing matters anymore, something like that. I am curious, what's up with the park now? Have you followed through on that? Like, just what's the status of the old zoo?
Yeah, so I went back there a couple of times last year after the trial. And, you know, so Jeff Lowe still runs the zoo. So the documentary led a lot of people to believe that, like, Joe's zoo had closed down and he opened this new one down in Thackerville. That actually never happened, because I think that the thing with him and Tim Stark fell apart. You know, that guy with the crazy handlebar mustache, that all fell apart. And I believe that Thackerville Zoo is still not even completed. And he's still, as far as I know, and Jeff Lowe has shut down his Facebook, so I have a little bit harder time keeping track of him. But I think that place is still open. The GW Zoo is still open for business. I went and visited it last year. It's, you know, a little bit sad now, to be honest. You know, all the Joe Exotic merchandise and everything with his picture on it has been pulled out. They, like, put it on a big burn pile and burned it. And so the gift shop looks a little bare. The cats looked a little skinny, to be honest, because they ended up losing their contract with Walmart to get the expired meat. So they're not getting as much food as they did before. They're doing their best, as far as I can tell. I mean, there's a lot of employees there who have really good hearts and they just care about animals and they're trying to keep the place afloat. But yeah, in my impression, it was kind of a sad place.
What do you think? I'll get you out of here on this one, Robert. What do you think the chances would be if I reached out getting Joe on the phone to do an interview to talk about this? No chance? Or do you think he's still such a narcissist he would consider something like that?
Oh, he would 100% consider it. He would love it. He lives, I mean, attention is his oxygen. He would love to talk to anyone. You'd be a little bit tricky to get him on the phone from jail, but it would be totally possible. You know, it's a dollar a minute. You know, you just got to get into the smart jail mail system. And yeah, he would love to talk to you, man. He is a complete, I don't know if I can say that word. Anyway, he loves attention.
Yeah. Dude, great job on the podcast. I just dove in. It's awesome. I can't wait to wrap it up. Thank you so much for hopping on with us. Good luck with the book you're currently writing. I understand why you maybe want to take a break and get away from this. And good luck with the miniseries coming out. We can't wait to watch that as well. Thank you for doing two hits on our radio station, man. And we greatly appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. This was fun.
All right. There we go. Great stuff from author, journalist, and creator of the Tiger King podcast, Robert Moore, on Twitter, at Robert Moore, M-O-O-R underscore.
Yeah, he goes through a lot of his stuff on his Twitter account, so go check that out.
Great threads.
He did some great threads over the last couple of days just about all the things that maybe the documentary left out or should have focused more on. It's funny he brought up the sympathy for Joe Exotic note of we shouldn't feel that, but the documentary kind of leads you in that direction.
It does do that.
I joked about that on the show yesterday. It's amazing sometimes when you get these confluence of events and it feels like the quarantine and Tiger King coming together. It was perfect. We all needed this distraction, and it is it's dominating the landscape. And if you haven't watched it, you need to. It'll soak up whether you can do it in a day. I've seen a lot of people say they could binge the whole thing in a day, and some people did it over a couple of days. It's worth your time.
Yeah, and I'll say too, I'm sure you've heard many spoiler alerts on multiple shows with this. Yeah, it might get spoiled, but trust me, it's still well worth watching, and it's still unpredictable, still crazy, still wild. So our thanks again to Robert Moore for hopping on. He was on with Primetime yesterday, and he just joined us for two segments. All right, coming up next, we got a lot more to get to. Crunch time around the corner. Corey Brock of The Athletic covering the Mariners at 2 o'clock. Swag's bag of plums. We got a whole lot more to get to, and we'll do it next.
One of our P1s, by the way, is continuing the swagbeefcake.com trend at the fan text line. He wants some of his ideas for photos. He's got a lot of them.
Ooh, let's go. Let's get a couple ideas
out
there.
You want these? You want these, Swaggard?
Yeah, you want these in your life. You need
these
in your life.
Let's hold them off for plums because, quite frankly, the bag of plums is a little light today.
Okay, we can hold them off for plums.
That's not the website is saying.
I did. One of our listeners sent this to us. I wanted to I saw this on Instagram this morning and it cracked me up.
The year 2020 thing?
Yeah, I'll get
it. It's pretty funny.
Bracketology in one moment. I want to read this off, though. Somebody is passing this around. It starts with this quote. Imagine if 10 years ago you were approached by a time traveler and he was like, look, I don't have much time to explain. All I can tell you is that the year is 2020. It's going to be an absolute S show. You know Donald Trump, the star of The Apprentice? Well, he's the president of the United States. And at the beginning of 2020, he gets into a Twitter beef with Iran and almost starts World War III. Australia catches fire and a woman tries to save it by selling nude pictures. Kobe Bryant passes away in a helicopter crash. Half the world's devastated. The other half just makes messed up memes.
Yeah.
A little time passes, and just when the world starts recovering from the loss of Kobe, some dude in China eats a nasty raw bat and starts a global pandemic that specifically kills mamas and papas. Everyone loses their mind. 40% of the population thinks it's the end of the world. Another 40% thinks it's all fake, and 20% blames the whole thing on cell phone towers and Tom Hanks' kids.
Chet Hank.
And the one thing that everyone seems to agree on is that the only way to survive is by hoarding toilet paper. Grocery stores are ransacked, and Charmin Ultrasoft essentially replaces the dollar as the United States official currency. Eventually, hysteria grows. World governments are forced to shut down the entire planet, lock everyone in their houses, and that's just for 3 months. Seemingly, the only person that can keep the people from completely flipping out and starting a huge riot is a gun-toting homosexual Oklahoma man with a meth addiction and a 227 big-ass pet tigers.
Oh, my God.
Does that not sum up where we're at right now?
It's 2020. If a time traveler came back to me...
Told you any of that, would you believe any of it? 10 years ago? I don't think I'd believe any of
it. I mean, you got to be really honest here and take allegiances out. No, you're not believing any of
it. I'm not buying any of that. Okay.
Your first question might be... how did we get to that point?
How are we here, man? How are we here? P1 DO2 tweeted a Tiger Joe thing, or Tiger King saying, "Gonna tell my kids this is the man who got me through the coronavirus."
Very true. Well, it's distracted me for a week.
It has, man. We need another Tiger King to carry us through the coming weeks. Okay, are we ready to dive into bracketology, ladies and gents?
Oh, yeah, the sports villains.
Yeah, the sports villains. I got the first four matchups up. Now, these are the day one's going to be a little boring, so I'm just going to lay that out for you right now because we got some lopsided matchups going on. By the way, you have about 1 hour left to go vote on all of these at Dirt and Sprague, at 1080 The Fan. I put a time limit on the poll questions, so they'll be wrapped up before the end of the show. So we'll let you know by the end of the show who's winning and who's moving on. You can also text your vote in, and we'll tabulate them together. 553-05 is a fan text line. I'll just run off through them. I mean, we know the favorite. Favorites are probably all going to win. First matchup, number one, Ivan Drago from Rocky IV and Judge Smales from Caddyshack.
You know how I feel about Judge Smales. Look, he's a hateable character. He's completely a D-bag. I don't find Caddyshack the kind of movie where the villain is big enough for me to hate him even remotely on the level of Ivan Drago. I have to vote Ivan Drago. He killed Apollo Creed.
He did.
He almost got to Rocky. And
now, let me ask this, though, okay?
Go ahead.
I'm going to try. I'm with you. I'm voting Drago. But we have one of our P1s that tried to come up with an argument for Judge Smales, and I think it's kind of a solid one.
I need an argument, so okay. Go ahead.
Here is his argument. He tweeted this to us, P1 Kyle did. I voted for the judge because Ivan was a Soviet puppet soldier to spread false hope.
Yeah, he's a propaganda machine.
So he wasn't technically the villain. Russia was the villain. He was just a weapon of the villain. And at the end of the fight, when he loses to Rocky, doesn't he like throw some guy out of the ring or something? Doesn't he punch like a Soviet official? Doesn't that happen at the end of the movie?
Ivan Drago?
Ivan
snaps out of it.
Yeah, he's like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore.
Screw you.
I'm not your machine anymore.
Right, but...
So that's the argument, is he actually the villain? Whereas Judge Smales, clearly, his strings are not being pulled by anyone.
That's a good argument. My counter to the argument would be, while the end, it seems like Ivan snaps out of it, Ivan is not snapping out of it in the beginning, the middle, and almost the entire movie.
And when he kills one of the main characters of the whole series.
He kills one of my favorite characters
Creed,
in the Rocky series. Yeah. He may not be it. It may be Russia, but he's representing Russia. Okay. He is the machine. Okay. So he's kind of the face of Russia.
Okay. By the way, he was in Creed 2, right? I haven't seen either of the Creed movies.
His son was. Might be in it too. I haven't seen the second Creed yet either, and I hate to admit that because I loved the first Creed movie.
Because that was like the theme of Creed too, wasn't it? Yeah. This guy killed your dad, and he's going to go like fight his son kind of thing, a revenge. Okay. Anyways, go vote on that one. Are we all on Ivan Drago?
No, I was on the Judge Smales.
Okay.
You hated Judge Smales more than Ivan Drago?
Yes.
You want a Fresca? I mean, he's a hateable character.
I get
hateable.
It.
Yeah, there's nobody more condescending, more pretentious.
The hoity-toity country
very
club.
Hoity-toity.
Asking
old
porterhouse to buff his shoes.
Want to come over and mow my lawn?
I'm with
a man who was christening his sloop the Flying Wasp.
We're waiting. He does some very hateable things with his face and his tone.
A man worthwhile. All right, we got one vote for Judge Smales. I like that.
Remember, he sentenced people younger than Danny to the to the electric chair.
I do remember that.
Come on. It's a pretty awful character.
It's hard to get behind a villain in a comedic movie.
Okay, well, let's go to the next one because you have two comedic movies.
I appreciate the votes to make it interesting.
And you can vote 55305 or go vote on Twitter. Ivan Drago, Judge Smales. There's your first one. Rocky IV and Caddyshack.
It's even a douchey last name. Schmales.
All right, next one. 2 vs. 15 matchup. Again, like all of the favorites are likely going to win. This one is actually the widest margin, I think, so far. Yeah, about the widest margin so far. Shooter McGavin, of course, from Happy Gilmore, and the Van Voldenberg siblings from Blades of Glory.
Well, I think you're overlooking the twins here.
Grouping them together, too. They're getting two for the price of one. It's not just the brother or the sister. You get them both.
I'm with you. Now,
package deal.
I realize I just said comedic villains are hard to hate more than... Well, this is kind of a matchup of two comedic villains. But to Swag's point, what you may not remember about those twins from Blades of Glory, they had their parents killed. They had their parents killed.
They did.
They manipulated mentally their little sister. They basically prostituted her out. They're cheaters. And they're also brother and sister who seem to have some kind of romantic affair going on, and that makes it even stranger. They should make this a lot closer than what the margin is. But yeah, I hated
Shooter McGavin.
Shooter McGavin. Yeah.
Shooter McGavin.
He was going to pee on the ashes of the house that his grandfather built.
Yeah, he was.
He took a hit out on Happy.
Yes, he did.
He hired a guy to run him over with a car.
You jackass.
you jackass.
Hey, you want to go to Sizzler?
Yeah. What are you doing later, Shooter? You want to go to Sizzler? And then also in the Happy Place, when he corrupts his Happy Place.
Yeah.
And he's got like the kiss tongue and he's sticking it down the grandma's throat. Yeah. Like, come on, man.
By the way, big fan of the naughty Happy Place versus the real Happy Place.
Totally.
You know.
What was that? What's her name? She's in Modern Family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think she had work done? Because I've watched that movie.
Well, she for sure did. I mean, she's in Hollywood, and that was like 20 years ago.
She looks like such a different person to me.
Yeah. She's a smoke show then and now.
She was in Ed, too.
Yep.
She was in Ed. That's right.
Yeah, she's been hot her entire career.
Yeah, she's been hot for a long time. Okay, so all three of us on Shooter. Again, you can vote at Dirt and Sprague, at 1080 The Fan. You got about an hour left. Text them in as well, 55305. Next one up. This one's the closest one.
Okay.
So far.
What's this matchup? It'd be the...
This is 3 versus 14. So we went serious comedy football coaches... Bud Kilmer from Varsity Blues versus Kevin O'Shea from Little Giants. Can you make an argument for Kevin O'Shea, or are we all on Bud Kilmer?
I'm on Bud Kilmer.
Bud Kilmer, yeah. I'm with Swag, but yeah, I can easily make an argument for Kevin O'Shea.
I mean, he's got Spike on his team.
The dude was good in college, becomes the obvious douche who didn't quite make it in the NFL and thinks he runs a little town now. He put his name on the water tower, doesn't care about his family.
He did.
He doesn't really recognize his brother as a real human being or equal.
He could never beat him in the race. He always races him and beats him.
Always beats him. He treats his daughter like a sex object, doesn't allow her to get into sports, really. Treats his niece like a sex object, denies her in football. And oh, by the way, he dashes the dreams of about 40 kids and says they're not good enough to play peewee freaking football.
How awesome are those cowboy uniforms, though?
Well, I hate to admit it because I did not like the Cowboys, but that's pretty.
That's a clean look.
Those were always my favorite ones.
That's a clean look.
The blue
right
on
there.
The shoulder pad with the white combination, those are clean-ass uniforms.
And, of course, you got to be. If you're the evil empire, you got to be the Cowboys, too. Yeah. He's the coach of the Cowboys.
And, by the way, he's such a self-absorbed narcissist. He gets out-coached by his little brother who didn't play football because his brother denied him that.
Yeah, and nerds on a computer who design plays with robots.
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
Exactly. I think it's good to talk about the losing side sometimes because Bud Kilmer is clearly going to advance and move on here. But Kevin O'Shea, he needed his moment in the sun.
He tried to kill, what was the guy's name, Billy Ray? What was the fat kid? He kept getting concussions, and he's like, suck it up, you baby.
Billy Ray.
Was his name Billy? No, it wasn't Billy Ray. The running back,
I believe, doesn't he shoot the running back up with, like, steroids?
Toradol. Basically, he gives him Toradol to numb his knee pain.
Yeah.
You mean Billy Bob?
Billy Bob. That's who it is, Billy Bob. So go vote on that one. At Durant Sprague, at 1080 The Fan, or 55305, Bud Kilmer versus Kevin O'Shea. That is our 3 versus 14 matchup. And then this one also lopsided. I told you, first matchups are going to be bad. Tomorrow it'll heat up, and then as the rounds go on, they'll get a little bit better. You got to get some of the riffraff out of here. Number 4, White Goodman, of course, from Dodgeball, Ben Stiller's character, versus number 13, Jack Parkman from Major League 2. This one's 85-14 so far. Is Parkman getting a bad sell job here?
I happened to come across Dodgeball over the last couple of days. And yeah, come on.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody.
I love the number of people that tweeted us the gif of him coming out doing the... It's like the smoke, you know, spraying around.
Dude, my favorite is the sexual overtones of him... And the taller bodyguard type guy where
Michelle?
He's always like, Michelle, he's rubbing his shoulder. He's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, my buddies call my fiance Michelle because of that movie, because of White Goodman. It's Michelle, man. Come on.
So you're the White Goodman in the relationship?
I'm the White Goodman in that relationship. And then him fat at the end is such a great scene.
Yeah.
After he's eaten all of his weight.
You got
back.
The inflatable padded shorts there.
Yeah, because White Goodman is a double dip for me. White Goodman is this. I mean, he's a slightly more douchey, but he's the same character from Heavyweight.
Tony Perkins.
So
I wanted to include Tony Perkins in this, but it's not a sports movie.
Right.
Technically.
But it's like a combination of characters for me.
He plays a great bad guy. He really does.
He's really good at it.
So White Goodman running away with it. Jack Parkman, though, was a pretty awful character, starting with Cleveland, and then he gets dealt. Oh, where does he go? The White Sox,
White
right?
White Sox.
Ends up with Chicago.
Does that horrible little shimmy shake when he gets into the box.
Wearing the big Oakley sunglasses. So go vote on that one. White Goodman, Jack Parkman at Dirt and Sprague at 1080 The Fan or 55305. That is round one bracketology. We will have four more matchups in round one. We'll wrap it up and then head you into next week for the Elite Eight since, the Elite Eight would have been played this weekend, right? God, that's sad to think about.
Why did you do that to
us? I'm sorry. So tomorrow's matchups, you can go vote on those. Tomorrow's matchups, let's see. We're going to have Big Earn versus Birdie from Above the Rim. We're going to have Clubber Lang versus Swack Hammer. John Kreese versus Johnny Lawrence. And then a hockey matchup of Wolf the Dentist Stanson versus Ogie Oglethorpe. But go vote on those matchups. We'll announce the winners in the final segment of the show.
Do you think we made a mistake possibly? Because we used to do this on the night show.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we tie audio clips. Should we pull audio clips?
We can do that for the Elite Eight. We can get them over the weekend. Yeah, right. Find some good clips from them and play them and make people reminisce about how awful all these characters are. We'll do that going into next week. I saw one thing out of the NBA that I want to get to and maybe a little backlash from some players. We'll get to that coming up next. Crunch time on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. All the members are temporarily closed, but they want you to continue working out, so don't sweat it. Over 100 free workouts available on their Crunch Live platform, which is free to all Crunch members. Just log in, crunchlive.com. Use the online member login. You can use it on your phone, TV, or tablet.
Let me ask you this question.
Fire away, Bob.
I don't want to derail whatever you have planned. I just want to get to this real quick. Somebody text in, I love Big Earn. I rooted for him every time he was on the screen. I admittedly did too because I thought Murray played such a funny.
He was such a good villain.
And at the end, with his hair everywhere and the rose in his ball. And of course, he wins, which is just so against how movies usually end.
Yeah, that's one that I got to go back and watch. I haven't seen that movie in too long.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
Him telling the story, he had his average score, and then he talks about how he plays two because the Amish do things two times as regular people. And then Woody Harrelson's character, like, wait, what?
wait, what?
And then Woody Harrelson sleeping with his nasty landlord.
God, yeah.
I think we'll get through the bracket. It's very fair to vote for whoever is in the villains, but also admit, who did you really like? Enjoyed them. You knew they were the bad guy. They were kind of messed up. But when they came on screen, you had to root for him a little bit.
You did, yeah. Big Earn's a great example of that, man. Corey Brock's going to join us coming up top of the hour. We'll reminisce about opening days of years past because today would have been opening day, but of course not happening. I wanted to get to this quickly, a more serious note, and just get your guys' thoughts on it. So the NBA came out. They're reducing the base salary by 20% of about 100 of the office's highest-earning executives because of the coronavirus. So they're cutting some of the pay for guys. But one of the things that continues to get bantered about is this, like, emergency clause, the force majeure event clause that includes dramatic scenarios that would basically get the league, trigger them out of having to pay their players.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer Dinwiddie has commented on this. Have you guys seen what he said?
Well, his contract's very interesting, too.
So Spencer Dinwiddie came out, and he did an interview with GQ Magazine, I believe. And they asked him about this, and he said, quote, here's the problem with the doomsday provision. Let's say they run the numbers and determine they can save X amount of dollars by instituting the force majeure. They stop paying players. Let insurance cover certain things, yada, yada, yada. If you do that, the players aren't coming back this season.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me you want me to come back in 2 weeks, but you're not going to pay me? That doesn't work in any type of business. It seems like the goal is to salvage the season in some form or fashion, which means you're going to have to keep paying us so we show up when you want us to show up. So they can get out of paying it and have insurance take over if they want, because one of those is like an epidemic, pandemic kind of thing that could trigger them from getting out of paying the players. War is like another one of those. But Dinwiddie saying if they go that route, then NBA players will not play.
Well, I think he's right, because what's your incentive now? You've taken my money away. And two, this is the most player-friendly league in pro sports. This is not going to happen. I really don't buy it. I know the story's been out there for a couple days, the doomsday not paying players thing, because they're going to lose maybe $1 billion in this whole ordeal, which, look, that sucks, right? They're a sports league. They run on making money like that.
And that will affect the salary cap moving forward.
It's going to change it quite a bit,
this
actually.
This has definitely got to be leaked from an owner. I cannot believe this is coming from Adam Silver.
And no way it's coming from Silver, and I don't think you're going to get there. I think the league is going to get to a point where they realize maybe their season can't go on. They're really just going to have to suck it up, and they're going to say, we're taking it in the shorts. You already started the year doing it with your China situation. You're not going to do this. It's a league that kind of, in a way, bows down to the player. I can't suddenly see them going to this panic mode of taking away contracts, because then you're going to have a real fight on your hands from the Players Association.
Yeah. So if you want them to come, there's two options. If they're going to somehow salvage the end of a regular season, then they got to finish and pay the contracts. Maybe you don't have a playoff pool that year, or it's deferred further out, because guys will still want to play the playoffs and win a championship. That's where everybody, you know, that's where legends are made. Or if they stop immediately, they start the playoffs immediately whenever they come back, then maybe you can deduct or prorate the contracts for missing 10 or 12 games or however many were left, and then still have a playoff pool for guys.
And watching how all this plays out, I tend to agree with you that they're not going to get there. But just in all of the other sports, some that maybe like hockey, for example, that isn't as financially sound as the NBA.
I actually worry about hockey a little
like
bit.
How this one, I think you even go there's a more serious note, because NHL players for the most part will be okay. But even at like the lower levels, man, like teams like the Winterhawks and the WHL, like how are you paying employees?
Minor leagues worrying about this in baseball too.
Minor league baseball, and they just finally are starting. I think some of the teams are starting to actually pay their guys. Now, I don't know if that was mandated congressionally, but you just wonder how long that's going to go on. And for the leagues, the NBA, Major League Baseball, leagues like that, they're not going to be able to get away with it because of the powerful players unions.
Right.
But some of the smaller leagues and ones like the NHL that maybe aren't as financially sound, they don't have that same power.
The one league I could see doing this, if this thing drags on a lot longer than we assume, is the NFL. Doomsday.
Dude, you could totally see the NFL doing this and like nothing happening. You just signed the new CBA. Ha ha ha. You're in for 10 more years.
They won't delay the draft. Yeah. Like Goodell's basically laughing at even GM suggesting that. They just had their free agency frenzy go on, which was great for our show and other sports shows out there to have topics to have that were sports related. If there's any league that's going to do this, it's the NFL. I cannot fathom, and maybe I underestimate what losing $1 billion does. I really can't fathom the NBA concluding that, we're going doomsday and we're not paying players anymore.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting anyways, that Dinwiddie came out and basically said, go ahead and try. We're not going to play if you want to go down that road. Cause all the owners and the commissioners come out like they still want to finish the season. Like that's their goal. So you can't have it both ways where you're going to cut off pay. And then after a month say, oh, by the way, now we're back. Let's go finish the rest of the season. Cause the pandemic's cleared out.
A lot of teams were stepping up. Players were stepping up to pay the salary potentially lost for the arena employees. And now a lot of those were just for the regular season. Like Portland, I think somebody did the math. Portland had, I believe, 9 home games left. Mm-hmm. So those employees, and you know people that work there, while they need that money, a lot of them do that as extra income. It's not their sole job.
Right.
So some people won't be hurting from losing that revenue. Other people really need that money, but they were just going to cover the 9. I'm wondering if playoff teams will have to step up and say, like, Portland potentially is not a playoff team at all.
Right, they were on the outside looking in, at least, but when it stopped.
But Dallas is a playoff team. Is there provisions where that's going to get extended and they say, well, we don't know if we were going to get to the Western Conference Finals or be a first round out. Let's just throw X amount of games into this and fund it. And then you get the non-playoff teams coming together to help those other playoff teams. I don't know if they would do that. But I've been wondering more so that than this player provision of not paying players, because I just can't imagine the league doing
right.
that.
Right, and even if you don't, they're all going to be fine because they have multi-million dollar contracts. And on the employee note, too, like the Blazers did step up and they're paying the Moda Center folks for the games that they're going to miss. Not a lot of home games. The playoff question's not going to get answered because we don't know, and maybe they end up finishing the season. But it's also important to know that those people rely on money more than just the main event in town. So they work concerts, they work winter hot games, they work comedy tours, they work graduation. So, I mean, they're not getting paid for any of those. So yeah. It's nice that the Blazers and other teams around the league are stepping up and saying, for those games that we've missed, we'll still pay you. But all there's, you know, that's only 40% of the events that they work at the arena, because that's only a portion of the year.
Well, unfortunately, so, you know, we heard it from Toby Moskowitz yesterday, the guy from Yale. And the reality is just there's going to be a lot of people that no matter what you get from the federal government check-wise, no matter what team steps up, if you're an arena employee, most of us, if not almost all of us, we're losing a percentage of money this year.
Yep. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. They are temporarily closed, but don't sweat it. They got over 100 free workouts. Go to crunchlives.com. Use the online member login and credentials. Get your workouts from home. If you don't have them yet, visit members.crunch.com/members/sign up to get started. Lots to get to in the final hour. Swag's Plums coming at 2:15, including some beefcake photo ideas. We'll get to those. We are going to break down Hunters Episode 5. We have one of our P1s ask about that. We haven't teased it yet. We will get to that in the final hour because you guys have watched Episode 5. So you're only one episode now behind me. We'll get to that. We'll give you the final results of the bracketology poll questions in the final hour. But we'll start with Corey Brock, baseball writer, our good friend up north. Just reminiscing. It should have been opening day today. How's Corey Brock feeling with no baseball? Which should have been opening day. We'll start the final hour there next. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Spray on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.